From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The documentary film Natural Family Values explores the effects of a city resolution debated and passed a few years ago in the rural community of Kanab, Utah. The resolution didn't do much beyond state a kind of moral vision for the city. It defined the ideal ingredient of a healthy society as a natural family, a man, woman, and what was described as a full quiver of children. The resolution drew attention from across the country, and it divided the city itself. Many of the city residents interviewed for the film revealed concerns about what change means for any community. Today in the program, we're talking about the documentary and the issues behind the controversy over the natural family resolution. At its heart is this question: what is a family? Join us after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. A few years ago, the conservative Utah think tank, the Sutherland Institute, drew up a resolution defining the ideal structure of a healthy society. They called it the natural family, and they left no doubt about what they meant. A natural family, they said, was a man, a woman, and what they called a full quiver of children. The idea of the resolution was to convince local cities to adopt it as a kind of moral statement for their communities. Only one actually did. It was the small city of Kanab in southern Utah. But when the city council passed the resolution, it drew attention from around the country, and it also managed to divide the city. The documentary film Natural Family Values chronicles the debate over the resolution, and in it you hear the concerns of Kanab citizens unsure about what growth and change is going to mean for their community. Here's Kanab resident Kimberly Willoughby.
When I grew up here, you knew everybody. Now I don't know anybody. You know, you go to the grocery store and you don't know anyone. I want it to be a community with families, you know, kids, and you know, and we're becoming a lot of a community with a lot of diversity, a lot of people who don't believe in having children, who don't believe in, you know, having a family.
Today in the program, we are talking about the documentary and the issues behind the controversy over the natural family resolution, the questions of what is family, what does it mean that growth is coming to a community. We invite you to join the conversation with your own questions or comments. 801-585-WEST is the number, 801-585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Frank Feldman is joining us. He directed and produced Natural Family Values, his first feature documentary. He also co-wrote and directed Vapid Lovelies, which won the Spirit of Slam Dance Award at this year's Slam Dance Film Festival. Frank teaches documentary arts at Spy Hop Productions here in Salt Lake City. And Frank Feldman, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you.
Chris Howard is also with us, the associate producer of the film. He was president of the media production company Red Rock Productions and has worked in film, television, radio. Natural Family Values is also his first feature documentary. And Chris Howard, welcome to you.
Thank you, Doug.
Oh, I should also mention that there's going to be a screening of the film on Wednesday at the Salt Lake City Public Library, and we'll give you details about that as we go along. In the meantime, join us 801-585-WEST. Again, 801-585-9378. Okay, gentlemen, let me ask you, how did all of this get started? I mean, the project. What made you think we should chronicle this? We should put it on film.
Well, we were originally we had started work on another documentary. Sort of evolved into this documentary. Sort of spawned out of the Amendment 3 battle a few years ago, the definition of marriage amendment, and it just sort of came from there. It sort of evolved. We were looking at very similar issues, issues surrounding, you know, the relationship between church and and state, and we were trying to look mainly at gay and lesbian families in Utah, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, came this natural family resolution, and it was just like, well, let's just go down to Kanab and let's film this city council meeting and let's just see what happens. And as it progressed, and as I, you know, started seeing more and more of these different people in the community and talking to them, it was natural to to shift the entire focus of the film onto this one event.
What do you figure you were getting at? You know, what was the thing you were really trying to explore? I mean, what were the questions you were kind of troubled by?
Well, you know, one of the first things that kind of struck, you know, strikes you when you see the film and struck, you know, us as we made the film was that at the city council meeting, it was clear there was a large, you know, a large vocal, you know, group of people that were clearly opposed to.
The place was packed.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was an overflow. It was, you know, wasn't where they normally had their city council meeting. And everyone was up in arms. I mean, literally up in arms about this. And, you know, I heard someone say that they had overheard one of the city council members who said that they didn't care if the entire town, if all of the residents of the town voted against this resolution, they were still going to pass it. And so it was like, you know, I mean, that it seems like it's beyond, you know, democracy, certainly beyond representational democracy. It was bordering into theocracy. And so that was like immediately struck us.
There, along the way, we meet a number of really interesting characters, and they're all kind of complicated. Let's talk about Tom Padgett. Because he gets thrown out of this meeting, sort
yes,
of.
Yes, he does.
To talk about Tom, if you would. He's an interesting character. I want to play a clip from the film here in a moment, too.
Well, Tom's this he's this old guy who's he's not originally from Kanab. He's from California, and he moved to Kanab because he thinks it's beautiful and just, you know, felt that it would be a great place to retire. And he's just so... He was such an unlikely voice. When we sat down to interview him, his voice seemed much more from a younger generation. Like he had so many of these issues about gays and lesbians and sort of society in general. It just seemed like a much younger view to me personally.
He seems like he would be one who would hold the kind of conservative view. I mean, he's kind of a block of a man.
Yeah.
He's got this like Marine haircut.
Yeah, and he was I think he was a woodworker by trade, yeah. You know, just he doesn't when you hear him start talking, there definitely is a strange dichotomy there between what you see
it
and what you hear.
It seems like his, you know, his views about community, though, were shaped by his experience in World War II.
Yeah.
That he, you know, he actually cites his, you know, as an example, his mom worked in an aircraft plant, and you know, and so he felt like community was coming together and everyone working together, and so this was, you know, for him a clear example of a community falling apart.
And we should explain in this clip, he's responding to the fact that he got thrown out of the city council meeting, where he's quite vocal and won't shut up. And so the mayor tells him, it's time for you to leave. And he does. Here's a clip from Natural Family Values.
I know how council meetings are run. Basically, I was out of order. And he called me on it. Mr. Padgett, sit down and shut up. But I didn't sit down and I didn't shut up because I believed in what I was doing. And I didn't feel that it was so much disruption as proving the point to the council and the mayor, that the people were not in favor of their resolution. So laughing my way all the way out the door, I said to the little policeman whose job it was to throw me out, I'm sorry, but I've been thrown out of better bars than this.
Were you surprised by the people that you met in that way? Were you surprised to find a sentiment like that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very small community, and I think all of us that live up here in Salt Lake have ideas about Southern Utah and the communities that are down there. I mean, I could cite examples of you know, sort of the news stories that we end up getting, and it's always these quirky stories and these seem to be just radically conservative people, and so it was really strange to be arriving, and I was expecting mainly to find a town of you know, just people who all shared that same view, and I was really surprised to find a community that wasn't just, I mean, it's largely Mormon, but it's not strictly Mormon. And the really conservative voices there, you know, they're not alone. There's also these, you know, very progressive voices who, and mainly it's because of people who've moved in from out of state, but there were also a number of people, that were from the community that had grown up there that were just outraged, absolutely outraged by this.
801-585 West is the number to join the conversation. Let's go to the phones. Christine is with us, calling from Salt Lake City. Christine, welcome.
Hello, thank you. excuse me. I would just like to make a comment about how this kind of attitude affects not only, you know, members of the gay community, but just single moms. My mom was a single mom. She moved my brothers and I to Utah after divorcing my dad, who was pretty much abusive in any way that a husband could be, but we were all very active in the LDS Church at the time and hoped that coming to Salt Lake would provide a supportive community for us. And, you know, my mom really needed support, and but she was one of only three mothers in our ward who didn't have a husband, and this kind of was not seen as, like, it was disrupting the status quo of that community. We lived in a very conservative suburb. Everyone went to church with us, and people from the very beginning made my mother feel like she was not worthy of, like, having status as a family, that we were not worthy of being called a family. We actually had a person from our ward who was in the bishopric come over to our house and was helping my mom with some maintenance stuff around. And he actually told her really flatly, just like, this was a fact of life. Like, you live in a really big house, and you're not, you know, you're not married. You should be living in an apartment. Like, you don't belong in our community. Wow. Because you don't have a husband. So, I mean, this attitude, it does affect, you know, families who do have children. It's not just, you know, single people who don't want to have kids. It's not just members of the gay community. It's, you know, even people who do really want to have families and things, but because, you know, of their situation are divorced or single moms. And I just want to get some thoughts on that, I guess.
Yeah. Chris or Frank?
Well, it almost seems like, you know, I mean, I totally recognize what Christine is saying. You know, I have a sister who's divorced, and she lives in a conservative city, and she's treated almost the same way, you know, by her LDS neighbors. But it almost seems like it's, you know, and especially with the Kanab resolution, it's legislating people who don't fit this vision as second-class citizens. You know, it's almost like defining them. And I think that's one of the issues that comes, you know, keeps coming up in the film, is especially that Tony Chatterley character, who we'll talk about a little bit more. But, you know, he's interesting because he says he's one of the city council members, but he says that, you know, my family doesn't fit that resolution, but it doesn't mean that we shouldn't have that ideal. And that for him, you know, and a lot of other conservatives, having an ideal is very important to them. But I think, you know, what's maybe getting lost is that, you know, by setting those standards, you know, that maybe for a lot of people are impossibly high, that it creates a sort of schizophrenia in the community, because there's so many people who can't live up to it for whatever reason.
I wonder what does this have to do with Mormonism? I mean, I guess it's the majority of the community probably would still be Mormon, mm-hmm. Although that's changing, and which is one of the issues in the film. But you note that in 1995, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints issued this proclamation on the family, and that seemed to have a big effect on the way this resolution played out. Do you think that's true?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, when the LDS Church issued that document, the general Mormon population became used to that sort of language. And I mean, if you look at the two documents side by side, they're really calling for a very similar thing. The Sutherland Institute, who drafted the Natural Family Resolution, is, you know, they're located here in Salt Lake, and they're a conservative think tank, and it seems obvious to me where they got their inspiration. And so, yeah, the people were, you know, it's also really common. I come from a both Chris and I come from Mormon backgrounds, and so you know it's really common in Mormon homes to see the natural family, or I'm sorry, the proclamation on the family, framed and hanging on the wall, and so it's something that is it's that vision has I think has become very 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 important to Mormons and in general and you know the last line of the proclamation on the family. Or may not
proclamation
be the last line.
To the world.
Proclamation to the world.
Yeah.
It says that they call upon you know governments to enact these principles and so it seems to me that's what the Southern Institute had prepared was a document that could be enacted into local law and then CNAB did it.
And it was written you know with that intention you know because the resolution or you know the. What the Sutherland Institute had drafted was a very political document. I mean, it was written in, you know, a legal document, moreover. And so it was, you know, it certainly was inspired by what the LDS Church had come out with and then, you know, had put this out to see, you know, who, you know, to offer it out and say who will bite. And CNAB was one of the few.
Well, it gets to this question of transforming a sort of an ideological concept or a moral view into public policy, making that leap, which you get at in the film. Let me play another clip. This is a fellow by the name of Richard Russell, a retired seminary teacher, I guess?
Institute. At Westminster.
Yeah. Talking about – he's a CNAB resident. Talking about that, is he?
No, he is not.
He's not.
No.
Good. I'm glad you pointed that out. He's talking about the importance, though, of I guess transferring this idea and making it work in.
Oh yeah.
In law, I guess.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Here it is. This is Richard Russell from the film Natural Family Values.
The church calls upon all citizens to make sure that that their communities and their governments. Try to enact these into their civil law, these principles in Proclamation of the Family. Therefore, a town that will do such a thing, or any government entity that will embrace by statute these principles outlined in that proclamation, has got to be favored by God. It's got to be smiled upon by God and certainly a place we'd want to live because that is where our values are enthroned and enshrined as the ideal.
Did you I often wonder because journalists have this difficulty from time to time trying to get comments from the actual church itself. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing you asked the church if they wanted to comment. Was Richard Russell as close as you could get?
Yeah, kind of. it was a voice that we knew needed to be in the film. That angle, that perspective. And another one of the producers knew Richard, and so he seemed like a natural fit.
Yeah.
So
we should also say, as you point out in the film, that. No one from the Sutherland Institute would talk to you for the film?
Mm. No. That one was a surprise.
That surprises me. They generally are inclined to talk about all this. Yeah.
Well,
why?
And even Paul Muro from the Sutherland Institute, he did a sort of public debate with Stephen Clark, the former ACLU attorney. And in fact, that debate is published on the Sutherland Institute's website. And it was a civil, you know, cordial debate. And so you're right. It surprised us that he you know wouldn't talk about the thing that he had written that was the source of this controversy.
801-585 West is the number to join the conversation. Before we go to break, let's take another call or two. This one, Christina is in Salt Lake. Christina, welcome.
Hi, thanks for your show. I listen all the time, and glad I could get through. I just want to say that I speak for myself and not for the LDS. Faith, which I belong to and have happily been active in for many years. Just wanted to comment to your documentary producer that it sounded like he went into his film with some strong stereotypes of the mindset of LDS people. And I just want to let him know, and I think he's probably caught on to this, that we are a very heterogeneous community with a lot of different perspectives. So when I when I vote, I try to take a lot of different perspectives, not just the proclamation on the family, but I do try to look at the long-term consequences and how it will affect a broad range of people. So I just want to let you know that, and I'll take my response off the air. Thank you.
Christina, thanks. So this idea that you went in with one impression of Mormons as this sort of monolithic thing, it seems to me, and we'll talk about some of the characters who were Mormon and maybe did surprise you in some ways, but respond to that if you would.
Well, what are my stereotypes of Mormons? I grew up Mormon. I didn't grow up in Utah, but I grew up in a very strong Mormon family. And so I've been exposed to, you know, all sorts of Mormons in my life. I think if I had stereotypes going into it, it were stereotypes about small southern Utah towns more than Mormonism in general.
But small southern Utah towns are packed with Mormons.
Yeah, they are. But yeah, I mean, that's a good point.
Yeah.
But I live, I live here in Utah.
That you went into it anyway. So to talk about that, whether you went into it with this idea that Mormons were, at least Mormons in southern Utah towns, really backward in the way they think.
I guess that could be a criticism that I should look at, but I think also the product of the
But that's not what you ended up with in the film.
No, film itself is there. We're not relying on stereotypes. We're not.
And in fact, a lot of voices in the film break those stereotypes.
Absolutely.
Well, Carol Sullivan is a terrific example. Yeah. We'll talk about it in a moment.
I think that there were certain things that I knew going into this. One, I wanted to make a balanced film. And two, I did not want to make an anti-Mormon film. I wanted a film that had a good, solid discussion of the issues. And I think we succeeded in that. Now, whether I went into a small town already believing what kind of characters I was going to find, I'm human. You know, we're all human. And we have preconceived ideas.
But that's one of the questions I actually wanted to ask you is how you were changed by this. Because it's one thing to have these preconceived ideas. It's another thing to be sort of transformed by the people you meet. And in some ways, I have to say, Tony Chatterley is one. Carol Sullivan is one. There are a number of people that seemed to surprise you because they're very human characters as they're portrayed.
Absolutely.
They're not.
Yeah. In fact, I don't want to talk too much about Tony Chatterley before we really introduce him. But, here's a guy who, every time I sat down to edit him, the thought that ran through my head was, this is somebody my dad, very conservative Mormon guy, would just get the biggest kick out of. He'd love this guy. If this guy was in their stake back home, he would talk nonstop about Tony Chatterley. And so I always kept that in the back of my mind, as even though maybe I didn't really get Tony Chatterley and his worldview, I try to see it through a different lens, one that I know well and that, would appreciate him. So,
For me, one thing that, talking about coming in with these, preconceived, generalities about a community or about a people, certainly on the surface, when you hear about the resolution, or at least for myself, I had some judgments about it. But what changed for me is that, a lot of the voices, it seemed like they were coming from a place of fear and fear of change. And so, and I don't say that as a judgment because I ask that question of myself. I say, how am I, am I afraid of change? Is my community afraid of, voices from the outside, from others, from, and where do I draw the circle? Who do I decide is within the circle of my community? Mm-hmm. And are they, are their voices just as important? And so in a way, that was something that I saw with the people in Kanab, like that I made that connection, that even though I don't agree with a lot of the, a lot of the things that they're doing and a lot of the fears that they have, but I felt like I, you know, if the situation was reversed just a little bit, I could easily have different fears about, you know, outsiders or other influences coming into my community, and how would I respond? How would I react to that?
Chris Howard, he's the associate producer for the film Natural Family Values. Frank Feldman with us, director and producer of the film. On Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock, there's going to be a screening of Natural Family Values at the Salt Lake City Public Library, the downtown library. It's going to be followed by a panel discussion. So for more information, call 801-521-4283 or just visit our website at kuer.org/Radio West. We need to take a break. Let me remind you the number 801-585-WEST, our email address radiowest@kuer.org. Christina, glad you called. Thanks very much. We're going to take a break. This is Radio West on KUER and XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're reflecting back on the controversy a few years ago over a resolution passed in the rural community of Kanab that defined the ideal family, a natural family, is how it was put. In 2006, the City Council of Kanab passed a resolution. Residents weren't really prepared for the response, national media attention, not to mention a division in their small but growing community. Today in the program, we're talking about a documentary film that chronicles all of this. It's called Natural Family Values. It's going to be screened this week in the library in downtown Salt Lake City. We'll tell you more about that as we go along. In the meantime, you can join us, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Frank Feldman is with us, director and producer of the film, along with Chris Howard, associate producer. Let's go back to the phones. Nick is with us in Provo. Nick, sorry for the wait. Welcome.
No, that's fine. Thank you. You know, when I hear about this, I'm listening, and I it reminds me a lot about that interview that Reed Cowan did with Senator Butters a few months ago. And apparently he's putting in his new documentary forthcoming about Proposition 8. You know, these legislators that feel that they're possessed of this absolute truth and they're going to do whatever, no matter what any other people say, because they know what's right. And you know, it doesn't seem like, the mentality of the church was always so, you know, dictatorial about these things and you know, ready to prescribe these things for everyone else, you know, a little bit more accepting. We believe this, but we accept what you believe. I mean, and we understand that you might believe other things. And I'm just wondering if your guests think that there's been some sort of certain, like maybe a switch in the church, some sort of change from the way it used to be to what we've been seeing more recently.
Hmm. What do you think? That's a tough question.
It is a tough question. Well, I mean, I would wonder if it's more of a change in conservatism in general, and not necessarily. I mean, the Mormon Church is a conservative organization, and Mormons, I don't know, tend to be conservative. And if the larger movement is starting to become a little more polarized, it makes sense to me. I can't really speak too much to it.
Well, you know, I mean, he brings up a really good point that I think the story of Kanab, while, you know, it is unique, and I think it says a lot about, you know, small towns in general, but also I think it is part of a larger story about, you know, the church's stance on Prop 8. And even more historically, you know, like there are many parallels between what just recently happened in California and what happened, you know, 30 years ago with the Equal Rights Amendment. There was this fear about, you know, about the family and the upsetting of these traditional roles, and, you know, and that
it was feminism, now it's gay rights.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But they're all seen as threats to the family. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, but what I think Frank is right, that maybe there is a change in at least strategies, you know, that it's always been something that's valued, but now it's getting to the point where they fear that it's so under threat that it threatens to undermine their, you know, everything that they stand for. And so they'll go to those lengths to, you know, get their members out to support these initiatives.
Thanks very much for the call. 801-585-WEST is the number. Nick, it was. Thanks. Back to the phones. Danny is with us in North Salt Lake.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Fine, thanks.
You know, at its heart, I don't think anybody would argue, you know, what a family is, even though in our society there's more to it than that, obviously. I think the big objection would be just the notion of some pointy-headed little think tank geek wagging his moralistic finger in your face and literally telling you what you should think about this. And the fact that the Sutherland Institute won't come and talk with you about this sort of just reinforces that whole notion. We've told you what we think about it. We don't particularly care what you think about it. No doubt these are the same people who would rail against activist judges for doing this sort of thing, or rail against secularists for trying to, you know, impose views through a process like this. And yet, here they are. And last question, wasn't this the same little town that, like, banned the UN a couple of years ago?
Yeah, no, that was Leverkin.
Oh, that was Leverkin. Okay. Yeah.
They did ban bikinis,
didn't go for this,
though.
I'm surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did ban bikinis at the public pool, however.
Yeah. Danny, thanks. Glad you called.
Yeah.
Well, you want to react to that? I mean, because that seems to be an important point, the idea of whatever values you hold, it's another thing to impose it on someone else. Mm-hmm. I mean, that seems to be a theme in the film.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, setting out to make a film that was more of a discussion rather than, you know, a diatribe, that's something that's very important that's on my mind in general, is just sort of the political discourse in America that, you know, it's a mess. You know, we can't talk to each other anymore. We watch our news station, we read our newspaper, particularly here in Salt Lake, and it just seems to be like we're not talking to each other. We're talking across each other. We're not talking to each other, with mm-hmm. each other, having, you know, good discussions and good debate, which should be the foundation of a good democracy. A healthy democracy is good, solid public discourse. But we're not having it right now. And it's, for me, that's something that's really concerning. And
well, you know, even, you know, editorial is no longer... advertised as such, you know, whether it's Glenn Beck or Keith Olbermann, you know, used to be, I mean, when I was a kid, you'd see it down at the bottom of the screen, editorial. So you'd at least know it wasn't news. It was somebody's opinion. And even that has changed. So that now, you know, the lines between news and entertainment and opinion are totally, totally blurred.
So you guys don't want it to be portrayed as, all right, we're going to yuck it up over the rubes in rural America.
No.
That's not what it's about.
Right. Mm-mm. No, there's plenty of other people doing that. There's plenty of polemics, you know, polemicists out there. And you know, in reality, it doesn't do any good. You know, I mean, if we really want to, you know, find solutions to these problems, you know, history has shown that that peaceful, you know, debate and peaceful is the only way to accomplish these things. And yelling and screaming and, you know, it just, you know, we have to live together. You know, we all live in this community. And so, and I don't think there's anything healthy about everyone going off and living, you know, with others of the same ideas, you know, that because then you create this little insular wall, and it's exact, and then you become what the thing you fear the most, you know. Then all of a sudden, it's you become fearful of everyone from the outside, and so you're always constantly living in a state of fear.
Let's talk about Carol Sullivan. She's such an interesting character. She's on the city council in Kanab, as she admitted, she voted for the resolution when it came. It was passed unanimously. But then you see her through the course of the film kind of rethinking things.
Mm-hmm.
She feels uneasy about the choice she made. Talk about her as a character, because she's complicated.
Yeah, well, yeah, she, like you said, it was initially she just kind of went along with it. And she says that in the film. She's just like, yeah, you know, it seemed like a good idea at the time. And then immediately she started getting phone calls from people in the community and single mothers or, people who were divorced with kids. And, so she started recognizing it as that. And she was a career woman herself, you know, as she puts it. I think she worked in the public school. She always worked. And so she kind of started to rethink it. She kind of looked at it and was like, oh my God, I think I did this horrible thing.
She did raise a couple of doubts. You know, there we see her in the initial city council meeting.
Yeah, just dipping her toe in a bit.
A little bit, yeah.
But you could see.
But then being shut down everyone else on the council was, you know, totally for it. And so she was the only voice of, you know, at least asking questions of, might this affect some people in our community? Might this offend or, you know, and yeah.
There's a moment, in fact, let me play this section in the film, where this resolution, the mayor is asking whether or not there's a motion to rescind the resolution. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting moment because Carol speaks up. And you have to listen for it, but she does. And I want to talk a little bit about this and the response to Carol. Here's another film from the film, another clip from the film, Natural Family Values.
Is there a motion to be made to rescind?
I'll make a motion that we rescind.
A motion has been made to rescind the resolution on the natural family. Do I hear a second? Please, less have civility and order in this. This is a legislative body action only. Do I hear I call for a second motion on the motion. The motion is to rescind the natural family resolution. Do I hear a second for this? This is the second call. If not, the motion is defeated. Thank you.
I was really struck by the mayor's response to that. He seemed really angry that anyone had sort of questioned all of that. And he says this, I confess, I took it as a very odd statement about... he said that Carol did no credit to her gender by speaking it. Let me play that clip and have you react to it.
And what Carol did was did nothing for her gender by stating that last night. What she does is by doing that, and she's done that in the past, what she does is by painting herself as a victim. Some men we use the term chauvinism. And we say that, you know, some men would say that that is a natural response of women. If something happens to absolve themselves of any responsibility, they are a victim.
What was he getting at there?
he's getting at a lot. It's quite a complex jumble there.
Yeah.
Frank and I have talked about this and you know.
Well, there's that also, and then the question which we don't have a lot of time to get to, which is Matt Livingston, who is he was at the time the 17-year-old high school student who writes this editorial in opposition to it.
Right.
The mayor in response writes these two letters to his stake president
and his school superintendent
wondering what was going on. So it gets at the way the mayor and maybe more broadly maybe people in authority, deal with dissent?
Yeah.
Frank told me, and it doesn't come out in the film, but I think it adds a little more dimension to the mayor. At least you can kind of understand where he's coming from. He was a military man. The ideas of military, you know, that they're defending our freedoms and defending our democracy, but yet military itself is very, you know, dictatorial. It's very authoritarian. And
all
so
about, all about order,
all about order and all about, you know, hierarchy. And so I think that, you know, that certainly I don't think it's unfair to say that that has shaped the mayor's attitudes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the thing that you're mentioning right there, or the last clip you played, you know, Frank and I have talked about it, and we kind of feel like it, you know, he says a lot, but one of the things that he's saying is that he views Carol, like her decision, as caving to the pressure mm-hmm. of the dissenters, and that somehow is viewed as weak or.
Right.
Well, I
hate to speculate about what somebody's thinking or whatnot, but the mayor, it seems to me that he sees Carol as a woman first and foremost, and so when she acts as a city council, as a member of the city council, in a responsible way, and as anyone might, where they've realized that they made initially a bad choice. I think that's an incredibly powerful decision for somebody to make, to admit when they're wrong and to go forward. And instead he sees it as this weakness of womanhood, and that she wouldn't just headstrong, just keep going with what her...
That she would question.
Her first instinct
she,
was.
Yeah, she yeah. would flip-flop or whatever.
Yeah, and the placement of that clip is also... I've really wrestled with having it be right at the end of the film, because it's the last thing we hear of the mayor, and it taints him so much.
But yet that he said that, you know, the night following or the day following the city council where Carol rescinded her vote. So
it's absolutely the appropriate place for it. But it really I think it hurts him. It doesn't hurt her at all. And I think her choice just shows her to be, you know, a thoughtful public figure, public elected official.
Yeah.
Frank Feldman and Chris Howard are with us, director, producer, associate producer of Natural Family Values this evening, this Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock. There's going to be a screening of the film at the Salt Lake City Public Library, followed by a panel discussion. For more information, go to our website, KUER.org/Radio West. We have a number of people waiting to comment. We will take your calls when we get back. 801-585-WEST is the number. This is Radio West on KUER and XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are profiling the documentary film Natural Family Values, based on the controversy over the natural family resolution in Kanab, Utah, a few years ago. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Let's go back to the phones. Thad is with us in Salt Lake. Thad, welcome.
Hi. I have just a quick question, and it's about the mayor. I'm glad that you had a little discussion about him. In reading about this case, the story, one of the things that was really interesting to me is that the mayor doesn't have any of his own children. As I understand it, he has two adopted children. And I was curious to know if you ever presented him with that fact that he doesn't actually have his own natural, pure natural family, and how that affected how he viewed this. And also, if he, you know, felt any kind of concern about that.
That's a really good question. We did ask the mayor specifically about that. I can't remember, Chris. Did the clip make it into the movie with the mayor talking about it? We use a different character also from the city council.
Who has a similar situation.
Very similar situation.
He has two kids and different marriages, and he admits that his family isn't, you know, the quote-unquote...
Well, he says he knows no one who's a natural...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He says he knows almost no one. And yet he's the one who says, you know, but it doesn't... You know, we should still have an ideal. And so... But yeah, the mayor...
I did ask him the question, but he seemed unwilling to really talk about his family, whereas Tony was just nothing but willing to talk about whatever you asked him. And so... And so he was definitely a much more, from a film perspective, much more interesting character.
But his voice, Tony's voice, is that, you know, he still voted for the resolution. He still supported it, but yet his family didn't fit it. And so, you know, I mean, for the sake of time in the film, it seemed to work better that way.
Let's hear a clip from Tony Chatterley on the Kanab City Council. Intriguing guy.
Yeah.
Double amputee.
Yeah.
Vietnam War vet.
Mm-hmm.
Unconventional man, yet deeply conservative and supportive of the natural family resolution. In this clip, he talks about, it seems the concern of a lot of people in Kanab, just this fear of change. They want it to stay the way it is. Here's another clip from Natural Family Values.
In Kanab, for so many years, we liked it how it was. I would leave. I went into the military, was there for 4 years, almost 2 years in Vietnam. And when I returned home, it looked the same. The same people. It hadn't changed much. A lot of people, the new people, hadn't moved in there yet. I liked that.
That you got that a lot in the film, and you get this sense that what happens now, it's things are not the same anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Kanab is definitely a community that is seeing its own level of change right now. There's a lot of new people moving into the community. There's a development, brand new housing development going in with track housing and everything. And it very much is changing the look and the feel and the flavor of this community. And so, I mean, I get that.
Yeah,
you know,
I think we all can understand being
sad about something, you know, changing and going away. And I think it's a very human thing, too. I mean, you hear it from every generation, something about something that's changed and something new. And I find myself, you know, in my 30s, already looking at kids texting and being like, "What's going on with the world?"
You know, heck in a handbasket. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, I get that. I understand that it can be a very scary thing. But we also, you know, we got to be ready for it. Mm-hmm. Personally,
Here's an email from Gerald, who writes from Holiday, Utah. After serving 5 years as an LDS bishop in the recent past, I was disturbed at the stereotypical view given earlier in the program. I'd like to say that my experience was that our ward members did not consider single moms, singles without kids, or any other variant from the traditional family as somehow lesser in their spirituality or in inferior social positions. Many of these single moms were active members with callings to serve in teaching or other positions in the ward. They were a part of the social life in the ward and contributed much to the ward's vitality. Mm. Here's a question that asks, what's happened to the city council members who voted for the resolution? Have they been reelected? Which gets at the bigger question, what's come of all of this? I mean, it's been a few years now. I mean, this resolution is still on the books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. From my understanding, the only person that I know of that's changed on city council is actually Carol Sullivan.
And everyone else is
still there.
What happened? Was she not reelected, or she just?
I don't know. She may not have run for reelection, or
yeah. It'd be interesting to find that out. If somehow.
But there is another woman who filled her seat, Nina Laycock, and I believe she's actually running for mayor right now. And I don't know how that's going, but
The question of I want to say something about Kit. Is it Baggio?
Bojo, I think.
There's this clip from, we don't have time for it, but she's this lesbian woman. You interview her on this motorcycle, she has this perspective of Kanab, which is really intriguing. It's in the background, there's this parade going on, and this flatbed truck full of
high school cheerleaders.
The Lariats.
And she waves at them, and she seems really a part of the place.
Yeah.
It's just such an interesting image because she loves it there. It's not like she's being ostracized. So Kanab is a kind of a conflicted place, maybe.
It is.
Yeah. And she's really, you know, I mean, Kit is from the West Coast, somewhere in the Bay Area, if I remember correctly. And she moved to Kanab because she loved the setting. She loved, you know, how beautiful a place it is. And I think she talks about the healing power, you know.
Yeah, the healing energy.
Yeah.
And she talks about how the community, you know, have – it sort of adopts you when you move into it.
Yeah, and I mean, she kind of lets us know that she might be a little less than forthcoming about her sexuality. But again, she doesn't make an issue of it. They don't make an issue of it, mm-hmm. and she's fine with that.
I was hoping we'd get a call from Knab. We have. Doug is joining us. And Doug, we don't have much time, but welcome.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Am I on the air?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, hi, Doug. Say, I just wanted to preface this by saying that Knab is actually a very enjoyable little town. You know, we're the town that doesn't lock our car doors at night. And certainly the resolution, I believe, was somewhat of a knee-jerk reaction to the ever-lasting topic of change in small towns. Mm. And we are the Western Legends town, and yet we don't have a saloon in town. But, it's still a very pleasant place to live. And I think some of our city council are aware that there are influences out there that maybe aren't the most desirable, and we're still just trying to figure out which way we want to go as far as development in the future. Mm. So, yes, the resolution probably was a knee-jerk reaction, as was the bikini issue.
Yeah. That's a whole other
thing that you just look at as you try to look into the future and see which way you want your little town to go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Doug, I'm glad you called. We have less than a minute, so let me – probably not a fair question with the amount of time left. But what'd you learn finally?
Oh, God. If we can just go back to the beginning of the conversation, just not to, you know, think what you know you're going to get. Does that
right.
make any sense?
Yeah, not to make assumptions.
Not to make assumptions and to you know, just, you know, be open-minded.
Yeah.
And
being willing to listen to people with different ideas.
Chris Howard, Frank Feldman, director, producer, associate producer, forgive me, of the film Natural Family Values, which is going to be screened at the Salt Lake City Library Wednesday at 7 o'clock for details on that. There's going to be a panel discussion, by the way, after. Visit our website, KUER.org/Radio West. Gentlemen, thanks very much for the time.
Thanks, Doug.
Thank you.
Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Lane Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.